Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Sabbe saṅkhārā anattaniyāti. For this evening's discourse, I'm reminded to continue on, or rather to fill out a missing piece of last week's discourse. And for those of you who understand Pali would have recognized the gātā, the words in Pali I said after the Namo Tassa. It's like all saṅkhāras are not mine, anatanya, they don't belong to me, to a self. And this is one of the not only realizations, but one of the methods one can use to develop peace and tranquility in the life, to develop a sense of ease within one's passage through samsara, to develop deep states of meditation, to be able to enter jhanas, and to be able to use that almost mantra, "It's not mine," as a way of penetrating the deepest of the truths and being an arahat, fully enlightened, doing the job. It's one of the, what we call the sannyas, which person can practice in their daily life at all levels. When the Buddha taught the practice for people in a monastery, he asked them to also develop certain ways of perceiving, certain sannyas. So instead of developing perceptions such as, you know, what I can get and how I can get by, or perceptions of guilt, or perceptions of fear, or perceptions of just killing time, he wanted people to develop certain perceptions, certain ways of looking at one's experience, for the sake that these experiences lead to both happiness and freedom, and eventually ultimate liberation. And one of those perceptions is anatta sanya, the perception of non-self. Many people will take that perception and turn it into just a long philosophical dialogue with themselves, to get lost in the Western defilements of thinking. And those of you who've gone along that path before, just to know how the only place it gets you is seeking out the Panadol. It's not a way to penetrate the truth. It's not a way to get ease and freedom in the mind. It's a thicket of thinking. So instead of practicing anatta sanya, the perception of non-self, as a philosophical discourse with oneself, I'm suggesting this evening to do something which I've been doing for the last few weeks, is always to use the perception, "This does not belong to me, not mine." I missed this out of last week's discourse because it mentioning the third noble truth, the way to eliminate craving and thereby eliminate the cause of suffering. The Buddha said that one of the four ways of letting go is chago. The right way of letting go is often described as generosity. And what generosity really means in practice, an aspect of that generosity which I have taken up and used as a practice, is to know that when you give something away, you're not just giving up that object, you're giving up ownership of that object. By giving the donation, by giving up the material things, by giving up the immaterial things, that you are saying that no longer do I own this. And this perception of not ownership, not mine, not belonging to me, is a perception which it is not too hard for you to justify as true and reasonable. Sometimes the perception of a self or a non-self is just too hard for one, and it brings into the mind just so many counter-arguments and so many doubts and so much thinking. However, when we focus on not mine, not mine, not mine, it certainly will encourage us to see something which is patently true, that much of the things which we cling to, which we attach to, which are burdens on our body and our mind, are things which actually do not belong to us. We cannot take them with us. We cannot even take them into the next day with us. However, we try to at all costs. So what are the things we can say as not mine, not mine, not mine? Whatever arises in this moment, even the thoughts which come up into the mind, I say that to these thoughts. These do not belong to me, not to a self. They're anatanya. They're not belonging to anybody. They're just like the sound of the kookaburras in the morning. They're just like the car, car, car of the crows. There's no real substance there which belongs to me. So any thoughts or ideas, even great thoughts, even great insights which come up into my mind when I'm doing this anatanya sanya, the not mine perception. I say this is just I'm listening to the words of somebody else. I'm just listening to the thoughts of somebody else. And when I start looking at it in that way, I can see the truth in that. So many of my thoughts and ideas I can recognize from the people who have influenced me the most. From the suttas, Ajahn Chah, other great monks I've known, my parents, my lay teachers. It's often well known there's no such thing as an original thought. So where do those thoughts come from? When I listen to some of my thoughts, I can hear my father many years ago. When I listen to some of those thoughts, I can hear TV programs which I used to waste time watching. When I hear some of my thoughts, I can see the newspaper article which I read. I can see the suttas when they're beautiful thoughts. I can see Ajahn Chah, but I can't see me. They're not my thoughts. And the good and the bad thoughts, whichever ones they are, when I put that label onto them, not mine, not mine, not mine, a strange thing happens. They lose value, they lose importance. And letting go happens. One of the problems with people who try to practice letting go, you cannot do letting go. You watch letting go happen through a proper perspective on the truth. Every time you try to effect letting go, it's more controlling, more activity. It's coming from the self, or rather the illusion of a self. It will never work. However, if you watch thought, it's not mine, not mine. Where did this come from? Where did it go to? Paraphrasing words from the Vimanavatthu, or the Petavatthu, sorry, in the story of, or the chapter on the snake, where the parents said that their son who just died, he came in uninvited. He left without permission. Such is life and death. And you might say the same to thoughts being born in the mind and disappearing. Where did they come from? Where did they go to? Very often thoughts come in uninvited. You don't seek them out. They just arise in the mind. and they disappear. And where do those thoughts go to? They're impermanent, subject to cessation. Really, they don't linger. They just create a next thought. And if you can see the fact that these don't belong to you, they're not mine, they're not important, they're not valuable, then the mind will turn away from them. In the sutta which we've just chanted, for those of you who know Pali, you'd have recognized the last sequence, that when you realize that these things are not me, not mine, not a self, the next result is something we call nibbida, which means you turn away from these things. You're not interested in them anymore. In fact, there's a sense of repulsion away from these things. I don't want to listen to this anymore. This is not coming from a self. This is a natural response to things which don't belong to you, which are a burden. You don't go around sweeping up other people's kutis, except mine if you're the upatak. You don't go around eating other people's food, only what's in your bowl. You don't go eating what's in your next monk's bowl. These things don't belong to you. They're nothing to do with you. Because they're nothing to do with you, you don't take them on board as a burden. As soon as you can apply the sanya, the perception, to thoughts, these aren't mine, nothing to do with me, I am not the owner, they don't belong to me, then straight away the mind automatically, without any other force, decision or command from you, will turn away from that thinking. From nibbida comes viraga, sometimes translated as dispassion, but got the secondary meaning, which is more important in this context, fading away. Wouldn't you want all those thoughts to fade away, to start to disappear? Haven't you been tortured by thoughts? The thinking in your mind is worse than the Spanish Inquisition, worse than any torture chamber in the world, because that causes you more pain, much longer than any physical suffering can ever do. And that suffering comes from the thinking mind. If you really want to stop that thinking mind, if you want a very good technique, something which works, and keep on saying to that thinking mind, keep on interrupting that train of thought with the mantra, not mine, not mine, not mine. Interrupting it until it turns the mind to see that perception that is true, all these thoughts, they don't belong to me. They come from conditioning, from past, and they disappear, who knows where. They're not my possessions. I give them up. Fading away of thinking starts to happen. If you want to be someone who dwells in more silence in this monastery, this is what will happen naturally. Why is it that we're obsessed with these things? It's because of attachment. Why is it we're attached? Because of the illusion that these things are important, that they're mine. All attachment begins from the sense of possession. So by saying, not mine, not mine, to the thoughts, they disappear from fading away with viraga. In this sutta here comes vimutti, freedom from all these thoughts. You can watch if you want, you can turn away if you want. You are not in the power of thoughts. You are free from them. It's a common saying in the world that people become possessed by their possessions. And this is so true of their house, their car, their family, and their loved ones. We become obsessed by these things. We do actually become possessed by them. We think that we own these things, but we cannot just let them go and give them up. Sometimes people even risk their lives to run into their house to save their expensive paintings or their heirlooms or something else. And sometimes they die because of that attachment. They really think these things are important. They're mine. Be careful that all possessions lead to death and more rebirth. So at least with our thoughts we can put, not mine, not mine, doesn't belong to me. With your body, it is the same. This body in which you've been born, which you've nurtured for so many years, do you really own this body? Is it really your body? Ask yourself that, inquire about that. You have enough intelligence, every one of you in this monastery, just to see the selflessness of this physical body. It does not belong to you. It is just like a house which you are renting. It belongs to nature. When nature wants to get it back, it will call in the body and it will demand your body back despite all of your protestations. Sorry, I'm not ready to die yet. I'm too young to die. I'm only an anagarika. I'm just starting. It does not matter. Death comes at the most inconvenient time for everyone except arahats. Arahats, it's always convenient. In other words, they've got nothing to lose. But for an ordinary person, why is it that we attach to our body and are so concerned and worried about it? Because we think it is mine. So I say to myself on the meditation path, not mine, doesn't belong to me, only a temporary abiding. This body is just like my hut. Last time I went over to India, when I came back again, the monks took my hut away and gave me another one. They moved me to the next room. Didn't mind, it's not my hut. It's the abbot's hut. I'm not always the abbot. I don't mind where you move me. It's not my hut. It's not my monastery. It's not my body. I don't mind where nature moves me. I should be quite happy it doesn't move me at all. It just gets rid of me. All of this abiding, owning, possessing, nesting, clinging, all comes from not seeing, not mine. All the sensations in the body, the pain and the pleasure, the beauty and the ugliness, the inspiration and the depression, the anger and the joy. Is that anger which you feel in your heart yours? Does it really belong to you? Or is it something which just passes through like a black cloud in the sky? You see it, you experience it, you even feel its effect. It just comes and goes as part of nature. The inevitable result of having these senses which are sensitive, which will have joy and pain in roughly equal amounts. It's the nature of the body to feel pleasure and pain. It's the nature of the mind to have these things. But it's not your possession. A lot of people, especially so-called Buddhists, try not to cling to pleasure. But too many of them cling to pain. They own their suffering. They wallow in their suffering. And they think they are their suffering. Because they get a lot of attention when they go up and tell the senior monk about how much they're suffering. They don't get much attention when they come up and say how happy they are. Actually, I think that I'm going to change things in this monastery. When anyone's suffering, I say, great, get on with it. But if anyone's having a good time, then you can come and see me. And I can spend half an hour talking about your happy times instead of talking about all your problems. Imagine what it's like being a senior monk. You know, you're just dumping all your problems on me day after day after day after day. Come dump some happiness on me. What I really say, I don't mind. Because you can't dump it on me. I just don't accept it. What I'm saying is that why is it we think we own our suffering? It's not mine, not mine, not mine, not mine. If you can actually develop that perception against all Vedana, when it comes up, this doesn't belong to me, it belongs to nature. It's the nature of things to be this way. It's not me, it's not mine, I've got nothing to do with this. When you realize it belongs to nature, all of the suffering and happiness, it's just that much, it's just suffering coming and going, just happiness coming and going. Here we go again, what do I expect? I didn't invite this. All the happiness you get, does it really come because you invite it in? It usually happens when you're not inviting in anything. When you start inviting in, just pain and suffering comes. All this stuff comes in uninvited, and it leaves without getting your permission. It comes and goes according to its nature. How many times have you tried to manipulate happiness and suffering in your life? How many of you have come to this monastery thinking that coming here you're going to find happiness? You come to this monastery to find freedom from happiness and freedom from suffering, to get beyond all of that. But a lot of times we seek happiness, 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 but we don't find it. We get more suffering, suffering, suffering. Even if you start seeking suffering, you get more suffering, suffering, suffering. When you stop seeking things, you're content, not mine, not mine, not mine. You use wisdom rather than the doer and controller, and all things disappear. When you realize that Vedana is not mine, then Nibbida comes up towards Vedana. And Nibbida comes up to this struggle for happiness, this struggle against suffering. The struggle is coming from the doer. This owner, this possessor, this landlord of the senses. See that landlord as just a complete fabrication of Mara. You don't own anything. So any pain which comes up in my body, not mine, not mine, not mine. Any happiness which comes up in my life, not mine, not mine, not mine. Just the weather of the brain, that's all. The seasons of the heart. You see that, then you can. Nibbida comes towards all Vedana. And from Nibbida, Viraga happens, fades away. Actually, the Vedana begin to fade away. Its intensity. The intensity of suffering, the intensity of happiness, the worldly stuff, tends to disappear. And it leads to Vimutti, freedom from the vagaries of Vedana, from the ups and downs, pleasure and pain. The mind becomes liberated from those things. The only reason why we cannot let go is because of the illusion of possession. So you might have a hard time justifying non-self. I don't think you should have too much a hard time justifying it doesn't belong to me, because that accords with your everyday experience. So when aches and pains come up, try that, not mine, not mine, not mine. But also when happiness comes up, please say, not mine, not mine, not mine, to that as well. If you just say it to one and not the other, this won't work. When you do that, the mind turns away from both. You find peace, freedom, liberation. A lot of times in a monastery that people carry around the past. So many Westerners are just filled with guilt and remorse, ill will towards themselves, built up of what? built up of what happened this morning, who said what to whom, in which way, who did what. All that remorse of the past. Why do people cling on to the past so much? You carry around the past like huge rocks in a bag on your back. I remember as a lay Buddhist reading about this Tibetan Milarepa, who'd have to carry all these big boulders on his back until his back became so sore and the big blisters came up. And you see that people haven't changed in all those centuries. They don't carry big rocks in the Himalayas. They carry big rocks of suffering, burning coal from their past, carrying it up and down the hills of day and night, burning their backs, burning their minds with what happened in the past, who did what, or what I did. Do you own your past? Even though in the one of the Anangakas reminded me yesterday, in the sutras it says, I am the owner of my karma. That's only an approximation. It's not quite the truth. It said, it's actually the words are not owner of the karma, I'm heir to the karma. So sometimes in the English translations we miss some of the subtleties of Pali. We don't own anything, not even our karma. We are heir to it, we're affected by it. We're prone to it, we're sensitive to it. We don't own it, because if we owned it, if it really was ours, we'd never be able to transcend it. If we really owned our past, we'd always have to be burdened by it. And the point is that realizing you don't own anything, there is no owner, that you can let go at any moment. You're free to let go. No one is forcing you, holding a gun to your head, saying you must be remorseful for your past deeds. In Buddhism, it's very clear that that is not the way to progress. The Buddha said again and again, acknowledging one's mistakes, just that much, forgiving, letting go, is progress on the spiritual path. That's what you should do. Acknowledge, forgive, just let go, finish with it. So you don't have to carry around the past with you, nor do you have to carry around the future. You don't own any of this. And if you can learn how to say, not mine, to every thought which arises from the past, good thoughts and bad thoughts, if you can say, not mine, to what you have to do tomorrow, not mine, not mine, not mine, then the mind will turn away, will be repulsed, nibbida, towards the past and the future. The past and the future will fade away. You'll be free, vimutti. This was the process in this chant of Anattalakkhana Sutta, from seeing things as they truly are, yata bhutang. When you talk about things as they really are, things as they truly are, this is what it means according to the Buddha. Seeing that these don't belong to me. And thereby nibbida kicks in. You just repulse from this. The mind just is repelled. And it goes off to the fading away. These things disappear from consciousness. When they disappear from consciousness, there's freedom from these things. When you're free from these things, there's so much sense of space. Huge burdens have been let go of. Huge burdens of guilt, trauma, conditioning, all from your past has been abandoned. So when you talk about letting go, this is a process which the Buddha was indicating as the stages of letting go. Seeing things as they truly are, not mine. The mind being turned away from those things fading away out of consciousness, and ending up in freedom from those things. So if you want to know how to let go, that's how to do it. And when you can say, not mine, to the past and the future, so you go into what I call always a timeless present. It's beautiful in the timeless present. It's got all the time in the world. I don't know, even during a retreat, how many people are still counting the minutes, the hours, the days, how many more days to go, how many more days have gone. Please develop the peace and the freedom of the timeless present. It's a cosmic time. It's a beautiful time. It's a free time. It's timelessness. And it gives one so much contentment just to be now. So we spend too much time going somewhere. We spend too much time lingering on where we've been. We've got too much unfinished business from the past. Too many plans for the future. We can never find a way of finishing off all that old business. Completing all the plans for the future. This is the way you get everything out of the way. You never get everything out of the way by writing all your letters, making all your phone calls, tidying up all the things around your hut. You never get everything out of the way. Already, I was a few people in their interviews. I did a little bit of work for the first week because I've got lots of work. I'm the abbot, for goodness sake. But lots of other people have still been tying up loose ends. What loose ends have you got? If you don't, not careful, you'll be tying loose ends up to 3 days before the end of the range retreat. And then you've only got 3 days left. How can you tie up loose ends? Just leave it all on the desk. Throw it all in the bin. No past, no future. That's how I tie up my loose ends. That's how I get things out of the way. Not by completing my business, by completely ignoring it. Letting go of the past and the future. Otherwise, I'd be a psychotic abbot. I never have any peace. There's always another telephone call. There's always another problem. There's always another thing to do. There's always another leak in the plumbing. There's always another person going crazy in town. There's always another person who wants counselling. So I just forget about all that. Let go into the present moment. All that past doesn't belong to me. No matter what I've said, no matter what I've done, some people like what I teach, some people hate what I teach, some people praise you, some people dislike you, some people think you're a marvelous anagarika, some people think you're just so lazy and conceited. Whatever it is, it doesn't bother you. Because they said I was conceited, that was a few moments ago, now it's gone. Where are those words now, when you can let go of the past? The past is not mine. We're free from the past. Not mine. People actually carry around the past of their ancestors as well, of their race, of their tribe. What a silly thing to do. Why do we want to burden ourselves so much? So when you can say all the past, all the future is not mine, not mine, not mine, the mind turns away. Past and future fade away. And freedom happens. If you want to be free, that's how to do it. Freedom from thought. Freedom from the five senses. The next thing one does, freedom from the body and the five senses in one's meditation. Why is it that people have a hard time getting into jhanas? It should be so easy in this monastery to access nimittas and jhanas. There's all the time, all the encouragement. I tell everyone here, you can miss lunch, you can miss talk, you can miss anything if you're getting into a jhana. Just, that's the most important thing. That's why we eat for. That's why we have huts for. That's why I get up here and talk for. So we can get into jhanas and get enlightened. It's the whole purpose of this monastery. So we're not here to eat, sleep, listen to talks, or write books. Those are all reasons. Those are all supports for the main purpose of a monastery. So if things are going well for you, just forget about eating. You can eat tomorrow. Forget about sleeping. You can catch up on that later on. Forget about even coming to a talk. You've got full permission not to come to any meeting if you're on the edge of jhanas and just want to push into the very last stage and get in there. Because you're learning how to let go of the body and the five senses. What is the big obstacles? Because of possessor again. We think we own, we are these senses. It's my sight, it's my images, my sounds. Even these sounds you're hearing now, do they really belong to you? Why are you either inspired or fed up by them then? Just let them flow through. The feelings in the body, it's tastes and smells. Do these tastes of beautiful food, not so nice food, do they really belong to you? If they're yours, they bother you. And they cause all sorts of irritations. So I look at my body when I'm sitting. This doesn't belong to me. It's a temporary home. Put it in good order and then I leave it alone. Sounds, even sounds in the monastery doesn't belong to me. When I meditate, I'm not responsible anymore for any sounds outside. Feelings in the body, sight, smells, tastes, even memories of these things doesn't belong to me. Even the breath which comes in and out of my body, it's not mine, doesn't belong to me. If it stops, I'm not concerned. Life does not belong to me. Prepare to die. What's wrong with dying anyway? It's just afraid to let go of the body. This body is not yours. It doesn't belong to you. It's given to you by your mum. So she should take it back again. Well, she didn't take it back, just let nature take it back. It belongs to, over here in Australia, Bower and O'Day, or Chippers. They own this body. I'll give it to them when it's ready. It belongs to the funeral directors. Just, they're biding their time until they get their hands on it. It doesn't belong to me. When I say, not mine, not mine, not mine, not mine, it's so easy to let go. When I say to my breath, not mine, not mine, not mine, it's so easy not to control the breath. Sometimes when you're meditating and you're watching the breath, you can't get it comfortable and you can't get the bliss with the breath coming up. It's controller again. It's the same way of when you're watching your saliva in your throat. As soon as you start watching it, it's so hard to watch saliva without controlling it, without getting involved and getting bothered by it. So if you're aware of your saliva and it's causing you a problem, say, not mine. What should you do? It's not mine. It's not my problem. Nothing to do with me. It's just a feeling which comes up. That doesn't belong to me either. Not mine. And then these things fade away. And you're free from them. As soon as you think it's yours and a problem, then you're in trouble. So try that with the breath. When you're watching the breath, breathing in, not mine. Breathing out, not mine. Breathing in, I'm not the owner of this. Breathing out, doesn't belong to me. Whatever other mantra you use along with the experience of the breath. And the whole problem of breathing, of controlling, will fade away. And the breath starts to change into a very beautiful and peaceful thing because you're not controlling and interfering with it. The nature of just watching something is just to be able to get stiller and stiller and more peaceful. I was mentioning to the Anangarikas last night about the meaning of upeka. Upeka comes as a result of samadhi. And upeka is the ability to look upon something without interfering with it. And that's so hard for people to do, to let things go, especially when they think they own it. They look upon breath and they think it's my breath. Better make sure it's going in, better make sure it's going out. It's my problem. But it's not your problem, it's no one's problem. So if you can say to the breath, not mine, not mine, not mine, then it gets very peaceful very quickly. And the beautiful breath, just keep that inclination of the mind, that theme which is reverberating in the background, beyond words, but still there, the mind pointing in direction of not mine, not owning. And then the not mine sees a beautiful breath and leaves it alone. It's not mine. Why should I be bothered with it? Why should I try and control it? It's not my busyness. I don't do busyness. I do contentment. Nothing. Just watching. Upeka. Being able to watch without interfering. Just like watching the sun go down in the western sky. I don't try and make the sun go down quicker. I don't try and make it go down more to the left or more to the right. It's beyond my control. It's not mine. Just watch it go down, that's all. Just watch the beautiful breath set. Nimitta comes up. It's not mine. It's not my nimitta. It's not a big deal. One of the problems with me talking about jhanas is that people take this is their ultimate possession. They want to achieve this so much. Just like a person in the world wants to get the mansion in the best suburb in the city in which they live. Now we're in the city of Bodhinyana Monastery, we want to get the best Nimitta mansion. We strive so hard, and we never get it. We're doing the wrong thing, we're doing something wrong. Even Nimittas, they're not mine. They're beyond my control. Not my business. Don't be busy about them. Just when this comes up, remember, not mine. When it's not yours, it will stay. It will be soft. It will be peaceful. Nibbida will come up even there. The mind will turn away from controlling it. Viraga, that whole activity will fade away. Vimutti, the mind will enter the nimitta and get into the freedoms, the vimokas of the mind. If you own that nimitta, you'll disturb it. If you own that nimitta, you'll never be able to let it go and go to the other side. You're starting to realize that it's this owner which creates the doer. Perception of mind creates all of the disturbance. When you follow that perception, it leads to deeper and deeper bliss, deeper and deeper freedom, deeper and deeper profound experiences of the nature of this mind. Those deep experiences just show you just how much you don't own, just how much isn't yours. And in jhana you don't own anything except the bliss. Sometimes if you think that that's what you own, then you'll be anagami, not the full arahat. But that's not bad for monastic life. If you get into the jhanas and afterwards you see just all that which disappeared. It has to be not yours. If it was really belonged to you, no one could take it away. But it disappeared completely. All of that past and the future which you'd been so worried about, all the guilt, the grief, the fear for the future, all the worry, all the psychosis of the mind, all that which took up so much space in your life, disappears. You haven't got the mind so filled with clutter and junk. It's like having this house where you could hardly move because there's so many things in there, and you just cleaned it all out. Space at last. Freedom. all of this is not yours. All the past and the future doesn't belong to me at all, so why worry about it? All of this body business, how much do we spend time, effort, money on this body? Feeding it, clothing it, making it healthy, making it fit, even burying it costs a lot of money. So much money on this stupid body, so much time, so much effort. It never belonged to us anyway. What a waste of a life. So when we actually see this in the jhana. You have to be absolutely idiotic, stupid, just mentally retarded to get into a jhana and not see that. Or maybe I'm sort of going over the top a bit on my descriptions there, but you can get the point. Within a jhana, afterwards, it's so obvious that these things aren't yours. You come out afterwards and you look upon this body on past and future. You look upon thought, you look upon breath, look upon all these things in a completely different perspective. All that which you think you owned and possessed, all that which you were attached to, you can see as being completely deluded. I didn't own this past and future. Why was I so worried about it? I didn't own my thoughts. Why am I so concerned what goes on in my mind? I didn't own this body. So why am I so concerned about it? Didn't own these senses. Didn't even own the Vedana. You see that so clearly. When you didn't own these things, that's where letting go can happen. Doesn't belong to me. Any of you who are only here for a short time, who in a week are going back home, you don't own this monastery. So, you know, you look after it, but you're not really so overly concerned about it. Any of you who are living in this monastery just for a lifetime, you're going to leave this monastery. You don't need to be overly concerned about it. Don't be, all those of you living in this body for just a short time, just a lifetime, don't be so concerned about it. Sooner or later, this body's going to die on you. And all that time you looked after it, and now it lets you down. Let go of it now. Let go of the body before it dies. That's the best time. And then you can be free. Free of so much suffering. And also seeing through the insight gained in the achievement of letting go of these things. You know, in a deep meditation, all those jhanas are stages of letting go. You get into such a deep stage of letting go, and you realize the truth of this. These things aren't mine. Don't belong to me. That much gives you enormous happiness, peace and freedom. Imagine what it would be like not to be burdened by any of the past. Even if a person called you a complete stupid fool a minute ago, a second ago, and it never echoes in the mind. Could you just let go of the past so quickly? Imagine having no fear of the future, because you don't own the future. Imagine having no concern about the thoughts which go on in your mind. They come and they go. They actually start stopping then. They're not important anymore. The reason why we think so much is because, especially as Westerners, we worship thought. It's so important to us, our thinking. So much so that anyone who's going to take over your thought, that's the biggest taboo. Take over my body. You can put my body in a jail, but don't take over my thought processes. That's really evil. We own these things. We think we do. We're so possessive of our thoughts. And we sort of, like sort of people who possess their cars, they show them off. You know, I've got a new Mercedes. Yeah, but I've got a new Ferrari. It's special issue. Only 10 in the whole of the world. My thought, so special. There's only 10 in the world of this special edition thought which I've got. Show them off. I've got a better thought than you have. Nah, 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 nah. without concern about these things. They're not yours. Imagine what it'd be like if you weren't concerned about these things. You'd be free. Imagine what it'd be like if you weren't concerned at all about sight, sound, smell, taste, or touch. All these things in the world would not concern you. You'd be free, liberated. You've seen holy many of you have seen holy monks in this world, people who are free. Do you really want to be like that? Or do you want to be like the neurotic man or woman in the street? What do you really want to be like? So make that choice. All this is not mine. So just to sum up this practice of anatta-niyang. Not mine, not mine, not mine. Don't go around thinking not self, not self. Because that just gets you into a knot. Just what doesn't belong to me? What doesn't belong to me? What doesn't belong to me? See how much you can develop that perception. Until you go along in this monastery not owning anything at all. Absolutely nothing. Then you're free. When you have no possessions, you have nothing to lose, you're fearless, unshakable in the world. So be one of the unshakable ones. And there ends this evening's talk. Is there any comments on it, first of all, before I finish off? Okay.
Sangha Namah.